Good afternoon. Congratulations on all making it all the way down here. I left half an hour ago. I just got here. I was in the building. My God. It's good for health. We're going to talk this afternoon about the safety of planned out-of-hospital birth in California. It's a large retrospective cohort study that Peter Schlenske, it was his PhD thesis. He's not here with us today. He lives in Santa Cruz. And we've worked with him to take that thesis and turn it into a publishable article in the medical literature. In the study we did, we referenced it because we thought it was so important. I went a couple years ago. I was in California, decided I should go visit him and ring the bell with him. Several midwives have been harassing him for years to publish the thing. And when I met him, he said, "Thank God you're here, because I don't think Faith Gibson is going to let me off, or Susanna Arms is going to let me off the hook for any longer. So this is good." So anyway, we've worked with them. It's quite a task to turn a thesis that you've engaged your life in for 6 or 7 years into 6 pages. And that's been the process. Also, the data was collected a while ago, and so we've done some extra work to make it more compelling to get published in a good journal. So a quick overview, we're going to talk a bit about the home birth literature, critiques of the methodologies in the existing national studies, why Peter's piece provides such a pivotal piece for the home birth literature, and we're also going to talk about cesareans and why what we think is a benchmark for cesarean rates among low-risk women. As you may know, there have been 3 national prospective home birth or out-of-hospital birth studies, starting with Judith Rook's birth center study published in 1989 of over 11,000 birth center births that found very low perinatal mortality. Then in the late 90s, a study by Judith Murphy and Fullerton of 1,300 planned home births, prospective study with nurse midwives, and then our study on certified 5,500 births associated with certified professional midwives. There also was a retrospective study by Anderson et al. Of 11,000 nurse midwife births, and all of them suggested low perinatal mortality. However, in all of those studies, there was no explicit comparison group. You just don't have either a prospective sample or a sample of births from hospital that are collected with enough detail and consistently enough to look very close at low risk, a comparison to home births, of course, where you only have low risk births. And nationally, it's just very difficult to do. So in our study, we tried to do the best methodology we could in our certified professional midwife study by having a systematic prospective design, a defined time period, defined target population, all clients going to certified professional midwives in the year 2000, mandatory participation for recertification. So we had over 400 midwives participate, direct validation procedures by independently contacting a sample of the women who used the midwives several months later to confirm validate the information and also find out about how content they were with the care. And it was national. However, we just didn't have an explicit comparison group. Now, we will talk about in a later session our comparison to birth certificate data in the U.S., but that's later this afternoon. Did anyone talk to
you? So how many of you here actually took part in either the birth center studies or Patricia Murphy Aiken and Judith Fullerton's study or our studies? Are there any midwives here? All right, so how many of you are familiar with any of these studies? All right, so there's still quite a few people not familiar with them. All right, well, how many of you are familiar with the American Public Health Resolution of 2001? That's even less. All right. Well, this was an important resolution. It was a joint resolution between certified nurse midwives and certified professional midwives looking at out-of-hospital birth. And the resolution followed a number of years of lobbying the American Public Health Association, and it also followed the preliminary data that we had from our CPM study. And what it said was it basically pushed for increased access to out-of-hospital births done by direct entry midwives, and we were very excited about that. And at that point also, it was the time when the ACNM had made a decision to start a direct entry route themselves with in their college. The other thing that happened following our British Medical Journal study on home birth, which was published, I think we're going to talk about that a little later, but was that there was legislation for professional midwives in Virginia, Wisconsin, and Missouri. And I also presented data, presented testimony in Indiana and California, and then there were several successful court cases for midwives. And following this year and last year, there was the beginning of something called the Big Push, which is the big push for legislation, especially in the Midwest, Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, South Dakota, West Virginia, a lot of states were really pushing for this, and they realized they should get together and see what they could do together to figure out how they could push this for legislative purposes. And how many of you know any of these films? Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Okay, right. And this is what's so wonderful is right at the moment, what's happening is we have the data on home birth, number one. Secondly, we've got the big push. But third, we've got these great films out right now, and it's incredible what that's done for us. I mean, Ricky Lake's film alone has really, just for us personally, caused a huge upsurge in the number of accesses to the British Medical Journal article on home birth. I mean, it's been accessed over 100,000 times now, but her film has got it rising again, like almost 3,000 times a month it's being accessed now. Orgasmic birth, we love the synergy there because Deborah Pascali came to us. She said, Betty, you know, unless you had put out your study, I would have had a hard time doing orgasmic birth because I would have felt like it was too flaky, but I knew now that I had the data behind it. So we are really looking at all of this, all of these things coming together. And Pregnant in America is a less known film, but it's a very, very touching film done by the Michael Moore of Birth. Have any of you seen this film? This is an amazing film done by a father who is genuinely looking for what his wife should do when she has a baby, and it's very touching. So we've talked about ACOG statements before. I don't know if any of you know about this, but shortly after our article had propelled Wisconsin and Missouri and Indiana into legislation, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists came out with a statement, of course, against home birth, not citing any data. And then there was a meeting between them and because they were suggesting that there shouldn't be any out-of-hospital births at all. And the American College of Nurse Midwives got very nervous about that because of the good data coming out of birth center studies. And so then they revised it to say, you can see the red there, the difference. It revised it to say it opposes home births. And if freestanding, only those that meet the standards of the Accreditation Association of Birth Centers or the Joint Commission or the American Association of Birth Centers. Now, this is at a time when the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in Britain has put out a statement for home birth, to increase home birth. The Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada have put out a statement saying women should have choice, and we are actually legislated in Canada. I personally, as a midwife, am required to do home births. I have a quota of a number of home births I have to do. We've said this before, but it sounds like a lot of people in this room haven't heard that before. So then we started getting critiques from mostly from obstetricians in the U.S. First of all, they said, well, this wasn't done in an obstetric department, and it's not credible because it's not done in an obstetric department. That's what they said about our home birth study. Then they said it's not a randomized controlled trial. And if any of you are familiar with the randomized controlled trial dilemma with home birth, it is that they can't find any women who want to be randomized to either home or hospital. People are quite concerned about that, and they even tried to do that in Holland, in a place where the home birth rate has been about 30%. They just tried it again recently. We were at the International Confederation of Midwives conference in Glasgow, Scotland, and this woman had a plenary. She was one of the young Dutch students saying, we're looking for women who would be randomized, and even in Holland they can't find somebody. And then the other critique of our article, which we think is valid to a certain extent, is that we don't have a direct comparison, but that is not available nationally across the U.S. And another thing they talk about is they suggest that they're accusing us of comparing apples to oranges. We don't think so. We think it's a way of looking at the epidemiology more closely. to do what we're doing. So one of the things that happened in 1992 was the Judith Fullerton, who was one of the people very involved in the birth center study, decided to take some of the hospital births in that study that she could actually get a direct comparison for and compare it to the birth center studies, and they were able to have some degree of control over several critical confounding factors that you can see there: marital status, race, education, age, so SES. And they did it in 6 states, but it was not very large. So we move to the Schlenska study, and I think I'll let you take over, okay?
This is Peter Schlenska. He got interested. He's a German engineer. But his wife wanted to have a home birth, and he got very interested in the issue of home birth, natural birth, and so did his PhD thesis at Stanford on home birth. And he was lucky enough to be living in a state that has a very large population, California. And what was the essence of why he was able to do this, I would say, almost unique study was California in 1989 had put the planned place of birth on the birth certificate, unlike any other state in the union, as far as I know. And without planned place of birth, you just can't tell which women, the 10% that are about 10% that transfer to hospital, you just lose them. If they were planning a home birth and they transferred to hospital, they end up as a hospital birth, and you don't want that because you want to be, those of course would be the ones likely to have the highest risk. So that was critical that they'd added that piece of information. The other thing they did is birth certificates are notoriously incompletely filled out, so they're not very good for doing studies because you'll find very high rates of missing data, which makes it very difficult to control properly. In this circumstance, what had happened is the RAND Corporation had been contracted by California to link all of the birth certificates to all the hospital admission separation certificates. So you had a risk profile for every pregnancy that ended up in hospital, a very detailed risk profile based on the admission separation certificate, which is quite a detailed and important piece of information. So it allowed him to look at, from 1.3 million births, took the low risk births essentially out of that. So he was able to compare 800,000 planned hospital births in 1989 and 1990 to 3,500 planned home births to just over 6,000 planned births, freestanding birth center births, all in California, all with consistent data. Because of this detailed information, first of all, he was able to do indirect standardization of rates, where he looked at 6 factors: birth weight, race, sex, which have been shown, those first 3 have been shown to show to explain 70 to 80% of the variance in the perinatal mortality, and then other factors as well, and you can see they're listed here below. He was also, with indirect standardization, you can only do so many factors before the analysis breaks down, but with logistic regression analysis, you're able to look at as many potential risk factors as you want, and he had 45 potential risk factors included, but mostly on this admission and separation certificate. So he could do very fine-tuned, careful comparison, and the issue, of course, is if you look at the home births versus the hospital births, and you don't have these details, you may be comparing women who are quite different. This allows you to make sure the women are almost identical when you're comparing the risks in terms of their risk profile. Now, he removed all the women who had inadequate prenatal care, and that both got rid of women in hospital who probably hadn't had any prenatal care or very little, but also women who delivered at home who probably had no care provider. And so weren't the kind of home birth we're talking about with a trained provider. Of course, also all the women who deliver at home never having had prenatal care, and it's just a spontaneous event. So as I mentioned, two approaches to the analysis. This is the analysis here. We start with that whole population I described, and we see that, and what we're interested in is the other one, the last study presentation. All right. On the far right, we've got, Betty, maybe I can point this up.
Okay.
Here are the relative risks. This is the risk of having a home birth compared to a low-risk hospital birth in the less restricted category of exclusion. We had two exclusion categories, one with a whole range of types of births that midwives would do at home, and the more restrictive one would probably be closer to what the birth centers do in terms of restrictions. But what you see is the risk of having a birth at home versus in a hospital or in the birth center versus hospital is almost identical. If it was one, it would be identical. And of course, you've got random variations. So no difference here. When you have more restrictive criteria where 45% of the planned hospital births were removed because they were slightly higher risk, some of the planned home births, some of the birth centers removed. You see a slightly lower risk, but it's not statistically. So essentially the same risk. Next slide. Now in our home birth study, we did compare to the national birth certificate data on a number of interventions, as well as to the Listening to Mothers survey done by Carol Sokol and Eugene DeClercq. So we were able to come up with comparisons of all these different factors. Here's cesarean. But we weren't able to do that intimate close control of the results to know how different they actually were. But we found a cesarean rate of 3.7% versus 19% in the U.S. for relatively low-risk women, singleton, vertex, and greater than 37 weeks. In Peter's analysis, of course, we look much more closely. Next slide. And here we have, for the whole study population without exclusions, you see a rate of 22% among these overall relatively low-risk women planned hospital births in the year 1989, and 2.7% among the planned home births, and 8.3% among the planned birth center births, and they're both statistically significant, not including one. When that population was restricted to all women, just over all babies over 2,500 grams, we see again very similar differences in risk. So we see again 21% versus 6% versus this has slipped over in the translation, 2.5% for an overall risk of about 1/10 the risk of having a cesarean at home. When you have exactly the same risk profile, about a third the chance of having a cesarean at birth center with exactly the same risk profile.
You
Oops.
Have to have them add there, but have started your care in birth center.
I'm sorry? Yes, these are all intended at the initiation of labor to deliver in that setting. So this includes the 10%. All of these ones for planned birth center and home births include the 10-20% that are transferred to hospital for birth care.
Okay, that will be fast.
Next slide. This is again with more restrictive criteria, like I talked for the perinatal mortality. Again, you see very similar results throughout. Now, what we decided that we could do is with all of this data. Now, it might be smart to just see we know what the cesarean rates are overall, but we wanted to see what would be a baseline cesarean rate for low-risk women. So we put the three large prospective studies together here, another study from British Columbia, and our current study all on the same graph to see how the rates of cesarean compare. And you can see it's all based on large sample sizes, except the British Columbia one. But we see very consistent rates between about 2% and 6.4% for the cesarean rate.
May I just break in there? Part of the reason why we started looking at this very seriously is because some of the authors from the World Health Organization had decided to revisit their declaration in 1985 from WHO that the ideal cesarean section rate should be between 10 and 15%. And we had received, I'm in the midst of editing a book with Robbie Davis called Birth Models That Work, and we'd received a preliminary copy of this article, and I'd written to the authors saying, this is great, but this is 10 to 15% for the world internationally, all kinds of risk factors. What about low-risk women? And so it really made us stop and think, this is what we have, is we can look at low-risk women. And so, yes, moving on, we just wanted to show you one small little, we're almost finished here, colorful thing that is in this book, Birth Models That Work, talking about Mexico and what happened with the school in San Miguel de Allende when they decided to implement an ideology that was a very midwife model, or based on the midwife model, which is based on holism, spirituality, science, and this midwifery model. And what we discovered from all of the different techniques that they had was, as CASA progressed in years and as they had more and more autonomy among the midwives, this is what happened to their cesarean section rate. So it's a very interesting thing for us to put all of these studies together. We're starting to realize how important they are. And we just spoke with Eugene before coming here. He's also working on that quite seriously.
In terms of results, we've got less than a minute. So the results for the indirect standardization and logistic regression show that low-risk women have opted for natural childbirth in an out-of-hospital setting, including the unfavorable results for transfers from home to hospital, experience a slightly lower, though not statistically significant, perinatal mortality rate. Sorry, slightly lower perinatal mortality rate than low-risk women who opt for a hospital birth with a management and obstetrician. And regarding cesarean section, women who plan to deliver with trained providers in an out-of-hospital setting experience 1/5 to 1/9 the cesarean section rate than low-risk women who plan a hospital birth under the management and obstetrician experience. And it appears that a benchmark for cesarean rate in the range of 2 to 7% is optimum for low risk women. Yeah.